And good afternoon, Scott Spears along with you on this Thursday, October the 25th, 2018, 16 minutes past the hour, last Thursday in October. Can you believe that? A week from today will be November the 1st. And what does that mean? Election time. Election time is right around the corner, 12 days away. It's going to be a very interesting election season, to say the least. Want to do a little bit of housekeeping here before we get to our two guests today. We will be live on the air Tuesday, November 6th, starting at 7:10 p.m. We will have continuous election coverage, uninterrupted, from 7:10 on election night until all the races are called. Charlie Evers and myself, Sean Kraft, will be in studio. Linda Sims will be at the Board of Elections. And Terry Tackett will be bouncing back and forth with reports from Republican and Democratic headquarters. Election night starting at 7:10 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio. Next week, October the 30th at 1:10, the mayor of Marion, Scott Schertzer, will be on. And coming up in about 10 minutes here, we're going to be joined by the Democratic candidate for prosecutor in Marion, Jeff Ratliff. But before we get to Jeff, we're going to start things off because on November the 6th, we are going to be electing the 70th governor of Ohio. And we are joined by the Democratic lieutenant governor candidate, Betty Sutton. Betty, how are you?
I am good, Scott. It's great to be back with you.
Hey, it's good to, always good to be with you. What's the campaign trail like?
Oh my goodness, it's great. Being out and talking to Ohioans, connecting with them about the things that matter in their lives, healthcare costs, and working to spread out economic opportunity and fight for quality education and the skills that people need for a good job. Those are on people's minds, and it's been nice to be out here working with them about on the issues and making sure that we put together a future that we can all be proud of.
How taxing is it to keep a schedule like this with 11 days to go?
We are very busy, but you know, if you want to be governor or lieutenant governor, then you need to earn it. And so Rich and I are happy to be out here campaigning, earning people's votes, hopefully one by one. And there are big choices in this election, so it's certainly meaningful to give it all we got, and that's what we're going to do.
With 12 days left to go, why should people vote for Rich Cordray?
You know, Rich and I are focused on putting money back in the pockets of middle-class families by lowering health care costs and spreading out economic opportunity, ensuring that people have access to quality education, and also that they will have the job skills that they will need to not only survive, but have a good life and thrive in Ohio. And that versus Mike DeWine, who has really spent 42 years in politics, and sadly, he's been looking out for the special interests. He's done a lot of on behalf of the big insurance and drug companies who have spent a lot of money on his campaigns, not the middle class. And that's why DeWine sued to take away those protections for 4.8 million Ohioans on his first day as the attorney general. And that is a really big issue out there on the trail.
Would you say that is the main issue, medical coverage for people?
I think the defining issue in this race is protecting health care for Ohioans, keeping those costs down, and ensuring that those who have those 4.8 million Ohioans in our state with pre-existing conditions continue to have coverage. And you know, Rich and I have protected and supported those protections for Ohioans with pre-existing conditions, and Mike DeWine, on his very first day, sued to try and overturn them. Just on a side note, Scott, you know, when I was in Congress, I actually had the amendment to stop discrimination based on pre-existing conditions immediately. So you can bet that I am happy to use my energy to travel this state to make sure that people know what is at risk and that Rich and I will protect them. And Mike DeWine has fought to get rid of them.
You know, Betty, one of the things that's been most interesting in this governor's race is from the time we got to the main election right up through today, depending on where you look, the polls seem to be dead even with 12 days left to go. Why do you believe they're so close?
You know what? Ohio is a practical state. It is a state where people are thoughtful about these issues, and you know, it is now when people are starting to focus in. The day is upon us, as you say, 12 days. But you don't have to wait 12 days. You can vote early, even today. And it's easy, and hopefully people will. But, you know, it's one of those things that I think people are assessing, and it's helpful for them to be able to tell the difference between candidates, because sometimes Mike DeWine is now saying he's always been for pre-existing condition protections, but we know that's not true. So that confusion that sometimes folks, when they get on the hot seat, like DeWine is now on health care, you know, it takes a minute for folks to cut through all that noise.
One of the big issues of this campaign certainly has been issue one, and there is a difference between Rich Cordray and Mike DeWine as far as that goes. The Cordray campaign is for issue one. Why is that the right choice?
Well, you know, we cannot continue the status quo. Under Mike DeWine's leadership as Attorney General, we have seen opioid deaths quadruple in our state. We've seen fentanyl run rampant in our state. So what happened is, as a result of that failure, about 700,000 Ohioans put this issue on the ballot. Of course, it's an effort to take those who are low-level drug offenders and move them into treatment if they're willing to do that hard work to get their life back on track. It's a lifeline for that, and hopefully for a lot of the families that are dealing with these issues in our communities that are being ravaged. It does not undo our ability to get those who are peddling this poison off the street. And so Rich and I believe that issue one is one way forward to change the status quo. It's not the only possibility, and whether it passes or it fails, we are going to have to find ways to tweak it to make things effective. But I can tell you this, it is unconscionable that 8 years into his tenure, Mike DeWine is now saying we have a crisis, and he's watched it explode. And now he's just saying, but no, we can't do this. We cannot accept the status quo of Mike DeWine. We need real leadership. And I know that Rich and I, together with law enforcement and others, are going to bring it.
Betty, this campaign amped up in recent weeks, and the ads on television have certainly amped up. And from the DeWine campaign, we have certainly heard a lot about these rape kits that allegedly were not attended to by Rich Cordray. What is the truth of that matter?
Well, you don't have to take my word for it. You could take the word of the Columbus Dispatch, who said Mike DeWine is saying outright lies in his commercials about the rape kits. Look, there. When Rich was the Attorney General, he found out there were a number of rape kits that were out in police departments and in communities across the state that were untested. He actually called for them to be brought toward the Attorney General's office so that they could assist in trying to help get some of that backlog cut out. And so people started sending them in. 5 months later, Rich Cordray left the Attorney General's office after putting in place processes and also technology to get that testing done. Mike DeWine has taken 7.5 years to get rid of that backlog, which I think is really not the greatest of records, to be honest. And so that is what he's trying to perpetrate it as if Rich is the one who had a big backlog and didn't do anything. But honestly, allowing all of that to fester for 7.5 years until you're running for governor, and now you finally announce that you've cleared them. So I think it's another attempt to confuse people and on these issues. But, you know, law enforcement, the Fraternal Order of Police, and the Ohio Patrolmen Benevolent Association, the biggest law enforcement agencies in this country, I mean in this state, have endorsed Rich Cordray and I in this race, because they know that we will be tough and effective on this issue. And they also know that we're going to give them the equipment. You know, Mike DeWine didn't give them the bulletproof vests that they needed when they needed them, or the training that they need to keep our communities safe. So they're standing with us, and we will stand with them, and we will make this state safer and better for victims across the board.
Betty, before I let you go, I want to ask you this question, because there have been reports now, I think for the better part of a year, that the current governor, outgoing Governor John Kasich, and Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor do not talk, have not been in the same room. If Rich Cordray should win the election along with you, what do you see your function as Lieutenant Governor?
Well, you know, that depiction of our current governor and attorney, or lieutenant governor, could not be further from where Rich and I are. We are full partners in this campaign, and we will govern together, and we will be focused on those things that matter to the folks in our state. We need leaders who are going to fight to make sure that people have access to that quality, affordable health care and workforce training and education that will work for all of our kids, pushing back and cleaning up the corruption and the scandals out of Columbus, and making sure that our communities have the resources again to serve the people. You know, Mike DeWine won't agree to restore those local government funds. And frankly, the local government folks are the ones who are doing the hard work on the front lines of the opioid and addiction crisis. So, you know, we can't continue that status quo. And so Rich and I will work together across the board, hand in hand, tandemly, to deliver for the people.
Betty, I can't thank you enough for stopping by. I know this is a very busy time, and best of luck, and I hope we talk again soon.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Take care, Betty. Bye-bye.
You too.
Betty Sutton, the lieutenant governor candidate with Rich Cordray on the Democratic side for governor. And now we're going to switch gears here and go to a local race. We have a very interesting race this year for Marion County Prosecutor. Incumbent Ray Grogan was appointed after the death of Brent Yeager last year. His Democratic opponent in this race is local attorney Jeff Ratliff. Jeff, so glad to have you in today.
Thanks for having me. Good afternoon there, Mr. Spears.
Jeff, why do you want to be prosecutor?
Well, at the League of Women Voters, and I've given several speeches throughout this campaign season, it's a simple proposition. I after Brent's passing and the appointment of the prosecutor and the things that I was seeing and how things were going, I just want to make Marion safer. I'm a lifelong resident here. I love my community, and it's a simple proposition that I need to do something to make our community safer, and so I entered the prosecutor's race.
Why is the community currently unsafe, in your opinion?
Anyone that's been in our community, that's lived in our community, we have seen throughout the years that they've been here how safe that they have felt, the crime that we have had. And you can go back and see, as you grow up, how did you feel when you were at Lincoln Park? Were there police that had to be there to just ensure that you could play a ball game without a assault happening, without parents yelling at each other? Did these things happen? They didn't. These are simple things that, unless you lived here, unless you lived in our community and know what our community has been through and how we are and where we are today, you don't understand it. And that's why my opponent doesn't understand it. He's not from here. So when I see these things, I've been a volunteer softball coach. I've been at Lincoln Park. I've coached. I've seen that police have had to be called there. And with the City League and things that happen, travel softball, travel baseball, that they are almost routinely on call. It's upsetting to me. And this is why I know that I don't feel safer. And I'm sure I'm not the only one out there that has that feeling. And that is why I entered this race.
What is the prosecutor's part in the community being less safe?
And this is one of the reasons when you start seeing problems early on from my opponent being appointed. Brent's health later on in his term before he passed away, he was a very hands-on prosecutor, anybody that worked with him. He liked to touch almost every case and wanted to see everything through. And he handled a lot of the trials. And anybody that's seen him in trial knows how effective he was at cross-examination and things of that nature. A lot of the things when he got sick and his supervision was not there, is still not there. These problems started occurring to where we would have just organizational issues. And people have asked me, well, how is that a big deal? Organizational issues keep happening as to examples that I've given people. When the police, and it was brought out in League of Women Voters by myself, my opponent had already prosecuted an individual. The case was pled. The individual received and requested intervention. The court granted that request, and case is done and over with. This happened, and just so everybody, I've always kept records. I always keep them and put them out so people know that I am not afraid of putting anything publicly, and all this is public records, and you can get it at the Clerk of Court's website. So it's case number 18-CR-151 was the case that finished. And then that case was over June 22nd of 2018. The prosecutor charges the same individual for the same crime in case 18-CR-448. How does he not understand, how does he not know that that case has already been handled? And at the League of Women Voters, his reasoning was the police brought him the case file, and so he indicted the case again, took it to the grand jury and indicted him. The problem is, as you're sitting there reading the file, as you're preparing to question the officer in front of the grand jury, as you're going through grand jury, questioning an officer in front of the grand jury that's going to turn out the indictment, how do you not recognize we already handled this case? Unless you're not following through with the cases, which would be how Brent Yeager, his predecessor that had handled his office, would do things. So he's not doing what has been passed on to him as he has claimed. So those are the concerns that I have.
What do you think the reason for that happening is?
Anyone that knows Ray and my opponent, he made some changes regarding how grand jury was going to be done. He put one of his prosecutors in charge strictly and solely of grand jury. He got the idea, as he has told me himself, from Franklin County, which is a large city, and one prosecutor handles the grand jury, they hand the case over, and then somebody new takes the case. So he took that idea and was implementing it. The problem is when that individual leaves your office, don't know why, you'd have to ask Mr. Grogan why that prosecutor ended up leaving. A case gets sent to you. You've not done one grand jury since you've been in office because that's what you implemented. You're not going to recognize that file. So the problem and the mistake that was made from his organizational decision on how the office should operate. That is a decision, and people need to understand those decisions have consequences. So what happened? The grand jury had to meet. He had to present a case. Officer was called in. We're doing the exact same thing twice. That officer could be on the streets patrolling, and what would the officer be doing? Making Marion safer.
It's interesting. We just had Betty Sutton on, and we talked about issue one. What are your feelings on issue one?
And this would be the one issue that came out during League of Women Voters where my opponent and myself are against issue one. A lot of the same issues that he has, I have. The main one that I point out is when you talk to individuals, probation officers that are actually doing the hard work with people that are on probation, and they have concerns that it removes their ability on how them in a recommendation and then also in the court and how to carry out that recommendation or sentence feel like their hands are tied and that they have no discretion on how to punish that individual or how to curb their behavior, because that's what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be making these individuals good citizens, preparing them to be back into our citizenry, living without restrictions, and we want them to abide by the law. So they have to have the ability to make recommendations and carry that out, and they have concerns about issue one. So I am opposed to issue one. However, what myself and my opponent I feel do differ on about issue one is I have said it and I will always keep saying it. Issue one recognizes a problem that we have. We can talk about solutions. We can talk about how to handle that problem, whether it should be a constitutional amendment, should the legislators be looking at this, and we can disagree about how to handle that problem. But I think everybody should be agreeing it is a problem, and there is something that we're going to have to do about it. And so once individuals recognize we have the problem, we can start getting to that solution.
It's interesting because drugs are a big issue. Big issue in Marion, big issue in Ohio, big issue all over the country. And I believe the mayor of Marion has said that it's hard to treat a national problem on the local level. Can you, as a prosecutor, if you win the race, do anything for the drug problem?
Well, right now, and this is what all voters need to understand, the prosecutor's role, judge's role, the legal system's role, we struggle if we are the first line of defense, if we are the ones that first get an individual that has that drug issue and that drug problem. There is protections, and I've told individuals, somebody has dementia, somebody has mental issues that can't make decisions for themselves. They're able to easily go to court, say this individual has problems, get them diagnosed, and say, let me be their guardian or appoint somebody guardian to make decisions for them, and then we figure out what we're to do with that individual. Yet we can't do it when the research shows us these drug users that mainly get on heroin and some of these other drugs, that it affects them to such a point that they can only think of one thing and not make their own decisions. All they're worried about is where to get their next drugs, and they'll do it at any cost. That's where the unsafeness comes in for our community, because they'll rob from you, they'll burglarize your house, they'll sell, steal anything to get that next fix that they need. So if this individual cannot make those decisions on their own, why is there not anything for a loved one, a family member, somebody to say, I have a family member that has a drug issue. Yes, they have not been convicted of a crime. They have not broken the law that anybody's reported to them. Ask any officer, any individual who's had a family member that has an addiction problem. They have stolen from their family routinely before they will start stealing from somebody else. They've went through their family, begged for money, started stealing from them. That family member has no recourse on getting them help until our system says, well, now they've committed a crime and we can do something about it. And so individuals need to understand the prosecutor's role is, once a crime occurs, the police arrest the individual and the prosecutor's office takes it from there. We need to toughen up on that. And then the judge does the appropriate sentencing that he feels within the case. The prosecutor's office makes that recommendation. So that is the system we have. And right now, we know it's not working because we're the first line of defense. We need everybody in the fight. And what you have been seeing, more medical doctors are getting in the fight. We have ORS reporting, which if individuals that don't know, that is when you go to get Sudafed at the local, wherever you get your medicine. You have to fill out a form. So they say, here's the amount you get. So better regulation regarding the opiates that are in pill form that are going out to try and curtail it. We just need more people involved in the fight, and I think that is starting to happen, but individuals need to know it's going to be here. We're going to be in this fight. You can't move away from it.
Being a young guy, and as you say, from Marion, in your lifetime and being involved in the law business, the prosecutors have pretty much been Jim Slagle, Brent Yeager, and now Ray Grogan. Have we had good prosecutors in Marion?
I have not. I was working in my father's office, just legal clerking, writing, things of that nature when Judge Slagle was actual prosecutor. So I did not get any actual hands-on experience with him. From Brent Yeager's perspective, I started in 2008. Almost extensively of my career, he has been the prosecutor. And so that prosecutor's role, and I think anybody would never dispute, and I feel my family, and we had a close relationship with Mr. Yeager, that he could go to bat. He could try a case. He could be in that courtroom, and that's where he excelled. He excelled on the criminal side. And I know individuals have ran against him and on tax foreclosures when Mark Russell ran against him in 2016 and things that the civil side and some of the township trustees, they had concerns about that side of the prosecutor's office. So Brent restructured and moved around some of his prosecutors to try to curtail that. But that was later on, I'd say after the 2016, that he started doing those things. And from the prosecutor that is in there now that is appointed, we also had an interim. Matt Frerichs was in there before Grogan was officially appointed. What I am seeing is things not being carried forward that have been part of the expectations of the prosecutor in the Marion community. And so that is the decision why I got in the race.
Interestingly enough, the firefighters have endorsed you. The FOP and the sheriff have endorsed Ray Grogan. Why do you think the FOP endorsed Grogan?
Well, I mean, you'd have to ask them. With his endorsements, if anybody's listened to him or actually followed his campaign, he's gotten a lot of endorsement from a lot of politicians. And I've told everybody, I'm not a politician. I've never ran for office. I felt the need to do so to help my community and to make it safer. The FOP had already came out for my opponent 5 months before I ever received an interview or ever got a chance to meet with them. I don't know why that occurred. You'd have to ask them. But the local firefighters, and it's IAFF Local 379, they waited, met with everybody and made their decision, and they endorsed me, and I'm ecstatic that they did so, and I've given any support that I can to them. Just recently in the Monster March, I put a photo on where the actual local firefighters are not able to provide the candy to hand out. So I stepped up to the plate and took out a bunch of candy, and I know they were handing out handfuls of it for the kids during Monster March. Those are the things that you want to help out our firefighters. I don't know that any individual's endorsement or any local union or the FOP, these are endorsements. My main concern and the ones that I am getting, the endorsements I am getting are from local voters, local Marion community people that have known myself and my family our entire lives, know what I've done in my community, that are getting endorsements. Those are on my Facebook page, Jeff Ratliff for Prosecutor. And then the endorsement that I am ultimately seeking is the endorsement from the voters. That's the main endorsement that I want. So any of the questions as to what I think happened or any of those, you would have to ask the FOP and see and get those answers from them.
I think one of the more interesting ones to people was the sheriff, Sheriff Bailey, as he is a Democrat, endorsed Ray Grogan. When you read that article, what did you make of it?
When I read the article, it's unfortunate that an elected official of a party would come out against any candidate of their own party, but he's allowed to do and take anything that he feels is appropriate during an election. What's concerning to me is in the voter alerts that people have gotten as a result of my campaign. I've done two of them, and they've been seen from people in the community as somehow a smear campaign or negative in any way. All these are voter alerts letting individuals know. The first voter alert I did is cases that I had seen, and I mentioned four of them. And the second one was cases that I seen problems where victims weren't protected. And there was three of them on that. Contained in one of the voter alerts would be a case, and pointing these cases out indirectly does reflect on the police and possibly the investigation that they had done. I did not intend to make any type of connection with the police in any way, and I hope that they didn't think that I was doing that. I was simply alerting voters as to problems that have happened in cases, and I am more than willing, ready, able, and welcome to work with the police and want to make sure, because there has to be cooperation, transparency with the police officers, and the individuals in the community want to work with police officers through neighborhood watches, things of that nature, so everybody can get in the fight to make Marion a safer place.
It's very interesting, something you said there, because we do have a commissioner race going on. We do have two races where judges are involved. We have issues. But when you talk to people on the local level, they see the prosecutor race as the one that has been maybe the most sharp-elbowed. Why do you think it's seen that way?
I just think when a neutral debate scheduled by the League of Women Voters, candidates were there, everybody goes through their introductions, and my opponent gets his first question, and within the first three sentences, he calls me a liar. The debate kind of got a little heated between each candidate. It was a spirited debate, and we went back and forth at each other. A lot of the other debates were not necessarily that way. So I think people are seeing that my opponent and myself are putting out those. We're spirited, and we're going in a heated debate. And they have taken that to somehow mean that the whole campaigns have been that way, which, from my standpoint, everything that I've put out is factually correct, and I see it as just notifying individuals the problems that I'm seeing, and it's just a tip of the iceberg. These voter alerts that I put out, just a tip. What's happened from January, and I said it in the debate, from January of 2018 to October 1st of 2018, of the counts that are within cases, over 47% have been pled down or dismissed, and that's alarming. That's alarming. It either means, one, they're charging cases wrong and they can't figure out an actual crime to put somebody on there, or the plea deals are so good that they're dismissing all these counts as a part of a plea deal. Either one of those are an extreme problem that people need to be aware of. So that's 47%, and that's alarming to me, and that's one of the things that I want to work on.
A lot of Democrats in this election cycle have talked about our Attorney General, Mike DeWine. And one of the big claims that I have heard is that he prosecuted a lot of small-time crooks, but things like ECOT, big money things, he didn't investigate until he was running for governor. Does it start at the top in Ohio? Has the Attorney General been a good Attorney General?
And from my standpoint, I've always commented and told of it. People, when I get questions about somebody else's campaign, I have to focus on my own campaign. There's things that keep getting reported, and individuals ask me questions about judge races and the governor's race, and I tell them, you need to refocus. I'm focused on one race. I'm focused on getting your vote in my race. And so I don't see how any of the other races and some of their views or any of the things that they take could somehow affect my race. Now, any county prosecutor, you want to work well with the Attorney General's office, and a lot of times you will send cases there, refer cases, and ask for advice and seek advice from the Attorney General's office. So whoever wins that race, I will be cordial with, I will be great to work with, and I will make sure that Marion County is seen as a county that works well with the Attorney General's office. Not to just combat crime in our own county, but to try and solve overall problems for the state as a whole in any way I can for them, what I can do locally to help them on a state level.
Democrats have won in Marion. 2 years ago, though, 2016, only one Democrat won, the sheriff. Last year, the city council turned Republican for the first time in a while. As a Democrat, do you think that Marion is a Republican area and maybe harder to win?
As far as how people are registered and whether we're Republican or Democrat, that is not something that I have been concerned about in my race. I tell people the prosecutor's office is not a political office in a sense that how I'm going to run the office is going to fall on liberal or conservative, Democrat or Republican. Crime does not happen on a political level. an individual doesn't go to burglarize your home and think, is this a Democrat or Republican that lives there? Am I a Democrat or Republican? It is blind as far as political views. And so I've encouraged Republicans, Democrats, vote for the best candidate in this race. When you look at experience, you look at my experience. I've practiced criminal law in over 42 counties. What everyone needs to understand is a prosecutor's office operates differently in every county. There's little things they do differently, and I've seen that. I've been involved in that, and I see how other ideas that can be brought to Marion to help Marion. So I tell individuals, look at the actual experience, and you will see that my experience compared to him, even though we came in 2008, is not comparable. So don't look at the issue or the prosecutor's office as one as a political role or a political position. Look at it as, I need the individual that's going to protect our community, the one that's going to be hard on criminals, sex offenders, drug dealers, crimes against the elderly, these type, murderers, rapists. Who's going to do that? Who's going to protect our community, our children, from those crimes, and vote on that individual? And that individual is me.
What things have you seen in other counties that you would like to bring to Marion?
And I've repeatedly said this, and everybody understands that when we have an overdose, those individuals, there is a statute that allows them to have what's called immunity, meaning they can't be prosecuted. What our office has failed to do in these cases, in which the statute allows for, is the prosecutor's office can serve this individual with a notice. This notice in it, which in typically in other counties, the officer signs it. It's already, reviewed and approved by the prosecutor's office. That individual that gets revived, we shoot them with Narcan, and everybody knows that it was happening so here recently with blue drop heroin that we had to ask for help to get more Narcan. So it was a serious problem. These individuals, they come through, the police officer questions them, tries to figure out what happened, and at that time can serve upon that individual that letter. And that letter will tell them, this is what you have to do in order to avoid prosecution. They have 30 days that they have to be in a treatment facility and provide that to the prosecutor's office. That's not being done here. Those are something that needs to be done, because ask any first responder, ask any police officer, an individual that has overdosed in our community doesn't stop at one. It takes multiple overdoses. A lot of times, even the individual that is a drug addict, after they overdose, still can't stop. They overdose again, or they overdose until they kill themselves. And this is what we have placed life over prosecution. But ladies and gentlemen, when that statute went in that gives them the immunity, there's also a way to notify them, get into treatment. If you don't, you will be prosecuted. And when you prosecute them, you can force treatment upon them. And that's one thing among many that we're not doing. In Union County, and in almost, I would say, over half of the counties in the state of Ohio, there is a organizational and a system called Discovery Matrix. Union County is the one that uses it the most, and Franklin County. Discovery Matrix puts anything from the prosecutor and defense counsel electronically online. So there is no disputes that go back and forth. Did I receive this? Did I not receive this? Go back through the emails. Check. I already gave this to you. Police reports from the officers. They can input them right there. It goes into the electronic database. A defense attorney would have a password. They get in. They can print off anything they want. The prosecutor can get in, print off anything they want, and the judge. Show me the matrix. Did this occur? Did that document go? So what you end up having is the state of Ohio is an open discovery state, meaning you guys have to give everything that you plan on using in the trial, and that could be exculpatory evidence, meaning evidence favorable to either side has to be for the defense given by the state. And so the judge wants to look, did this occur? Then there's no disputes at trial. There has been multiple trials, and I was on the trial where the judge was forced to throw out a count based on late disclosure. The actual officer's report in the case had been pending for over 2 years, scheduled for trial 6 different times, and we find out on the witness stand and the day before that there's a report that the officer did a supplemental and that wasn't provided. And so that late disclosure led to a dismissal. Those are the kind of problems that are organizationally leading to serious consequences in the caseload that is happening here in Marion.
Being an attorney and practicing in 45 counties in
42.
I upped it a little bit for you.
Yeah.
42. Does it give you a leg up to work on the other side?
That one way is I see how each one handles their office, how they are prosecuted. When I tell individuals, and I've been asked the question, well, how can you change sides? I tell everybody, creating reasonable doubt. Ask any good defense attorney. In order to create reasonable doubt, the first thing you do is explain to them that creating a case, the analogy is like a puzzle or anything of that nature. You put the pieces together. And so what are the pieces? That is the evidence that the state presents. This is how a case should be done. You explain it. Here's what should be done in a case. This is what needs to be done. This is how the prosecutor, the police, how everybody involved in that case should have handled this case. Then you point out what wasn't done in this case. Try to put reasonable doubt in their mind. Try to point out where they don't have the evidence. What puzzle piece is missing? How can you convict this individual when you have puzzle pieces missing? When this wasn't done, we went through how it should be done. You get the officers to go through it, any of the witnesses to say that is the standard that needs to be used, that is how the case should have developed, and then you point out why it hasn't happened. And by doing that on a routine basis in the jury trials that I've had, you find out this is what you need to do when you present a case as the prosecutor. And that's the experience I have, because I've been telling prosecutors in every county that I've been trying cases, here's what you did wrong. And so I know what you need to do right in order for that defense attorney to have nothing to present to the jury. There is no reasonable doubt in the cases I'll be presenting. Why? Because they will be locked down, airtight cases with a wonderful investigation done by our police, and our prosecutor's office will present it perfectly for the juries.
Did you always want to be in the law profession?
In actuality, just based on when I started, my father's been in the law profession. I've been involved in it a long time. It's one of those things that draws you there. I initially started school as a pre-med major. I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. You see something, you get a surgery, oh, that's cool. But once you get into school and you start seeing the schooling that occurs, it's one of those things that you find out quickly, is this really what you're interested in? And was the job that you thought that you wanted actually the one that you're studying for? And I felt a lot of the classes, the chemistries, especially organic chemistry, how did that equate to an orthopedic surgeon? Why am I studying this? And the caseload and the things they do, you have to make choices. Most people that enter college in a certain major change. For me, the law is one of those things where I've been involved in my family. I've worked at the office. It's one of those things that came natural to me. And so when I was in college, changing my school, easy. I mean, at high school, I graduated PSEO with 71 credit hours. I was already a sophomore. When I went to wrestle with Ohio State, you usually take a redshirt year, so I have 5 years to actually put in, and I'm already a sophomore. I could have finished in 2 years, but as a part of my athletic career, I wanted to do my part and had my own goals in wrestling, so I just kept taking classes. And you find out who you are and what you're interested in, and I just really reverted back to something that interested me at a young age that took me in a full circle, so to speak, right back to where I started. And so it's one of those interesting things that a lot of people's professions will find them versus them trying to find their profession.
Anybody who knows you and about Marion sports knows you have a very stellar wrestling career. That's a competitive sport. Does this bring out the competitive nature in you?
Politics can bring out the competitive nature in anyone, but the competitive nature of wrestling, it's me versus my opponent. It is just me, just him. I got to rely on no one else but myself. In a courtroom, when you're that attorney, when you're presenting your case, there's nobody else. It's you versus the prosecutor. It's the defense counsel versus the prosecutor. Prosecutor versus the defense. It is a technique, a strategy. It is a inherent thing that you have to learn. You either have it, you don't. The best trial attorneys know they are able to relate to jurors. They're able to get the jurors to like them, to like what they are presenting to them, and to hear what they have to say. This is a trained technique. The best attorneys aren't the ones that are just the smartest. You got to be able to present what you have to the jury. That's one of the things I pride myself in. I was in my first jury trial in 2 weeks of being an attorney, and it was an aggravated robbery case I tried with my father in Belmont County. 2 week trial. And 2 weeks after that, I was trying my case by myself here in Marion County. That's how my jury trial experience has just in this, I don't know, 10 years that I've had, it's going to be a decade, November 8th, is my experience has put me where someone else of my experience would be 30, 40 years into the practice, because we try so many jury trials and we're in the courtroom, and it's a skill that you either have, you don't have. It's a skill you need to develop, hone, and it's one of those things that's very difficult. Some attorneys never can do it and can't do it, and they end up finding a job with the legal system that is, you know, insurance or things of that nature, and they're not an actual trial attorney, and there's nothing wrong with that. But that's what the people in this community need, because those serious cases and those defense attorneys that you're going to be faced with, you need to have the best prosecutor that can present the case of the jury trial, and that's me.
The guest today is Democratic candidate for prosecutor here in Marion, Ohio, Jeff Ratliff. Lots more to talk about after this 10-minute break. Stay tuned.
The WWDH offices are located at 559 East Center Street in the lower level of the Belltone.